Welcome to Acorn to Oak with Penny Quayle Pierce and co-host Matthew Donaghy. Within each acorn, there is the DNA that strives to be a mighty oak tree. All it needs to reach its potential for greatness is to be activated. You are the acorn. On this show, we will share with you the tools and guidance you need to grow into the person you are meant to be. And now your host, Penny Quayle Pierce and co-host Matthew Donaghy.
Hi, good afternoon, good evening. It's Penny, and hopefully Matthew will be joining us promptly. Again, a couple of technical problems, but I'm sure it all gets sorted out really quickly. So this evening we wanted to talk and discuss basically quite an emotive subject around anxiety and depression. Is it nature or nurture? And, you know, it's really quite interesting people's take on this, and we've had quite a little bit of interest in the show coming up to it, and people telling us their thoughts around this. And it's, it really is quite interesting, and every psychologist will probably have a different opinion. But what, you know, many studies suggest is that the neurotransmitter dopamine may play a role in the risk of depression. And it's actually coming up with your own personal thoughts or definition of what depression is. You know, what are the signs and symptoms of depression? And I would say to you that, you know, with the clientele that I work with, it's when people are coming in and they feel that they're either, you know, they're numbing out, or they're using maybe alcohol or recreational drugs or cigarettes or overeating, or, you know, gym addictions, going to the gym too often. Because they just don't feel like they're connecting with life. And, you know, the depression then may or may not go down the route of going to a general practitioner and maybe getting some drugs to help them with their feelings of not feeling connected. Feeling connected to themselves, not feeling connected to others, maybe having, you know, just not feeling like they can cope with everyday life. And then as the depression worsens, maybe getting down to the stage where physically they feel tired all the time, they don't feel motivated, they may well feel that life is crushing them, and they may well feel that, you know, they don't have the energy maybe to get up off the couch or to go to school or to go to work or all of these types of things, you know. And there's a huge variations of signs and symptoms of depression. Anxiety is slightly easier to look at the definition, because anxiety is when you're in hurry, worry, when everything is, you know, will set you off in, not necessarily into a full-blown panic attack, but will basically, you know, you have anticipatory worry, maybe. So, you know, I know that my own grandmother would have gastrointestinal symptoms whenever she was needing to go out, especially if she was supporting her husband at a work function. So she would find that incredibly debilitating. And in fact, actually got to the stage where she didn't volunteer to go to any of her husband's work functions and stuff like that. So she would find being out in social situations quite difficult, or where she felt that she needed to perform. So that is a form of anxiety. And then, of course, the anxiety may go from that to, again, being not, you know, housebound and not feeling that you can go to the local shop because of the anxiety of getting there or what people will ask you, and all sorts of different things going on in your mind, in your conscious mind, that will keep you stuck into a pattern of anxiety. And, you know, anxiety can be incredibly debilitating. And, you know, I have seen many clients coming to see me in practice for, you know, panic attacks and all sorts of different things, which I have helped them unpick. But, you know, it's also looking, as I was saying, at the nature and nurture. You know, sometimes when we grow up in families and someone has been suffering, maybe a parent or a grandparent has been suffering from anxiety and depression, we can learn quite early what those signs and symptoms are. And if it's in the family, then it becomes slightly more acceptable for us to do that behaviour as a child. And I was talking with someone last week, and they were just basically saying that she's concerned because her husband had bought her daughter a worry monster, or worry, a thing that she could actually use to help her with worry. And she was actually saying, you know, actually, she felt, or she discussed the thing that maybe this would actually worsen the fact that her daughter was getting some attention from the fact that she was constantly holding this thing and using it for anxiety. And it's really quite interesting. I mean, you know, obviously this is just one case, and, you know, and it can be that we learn, you know, that actually if we do show signs of anxiety and we become known for signs of anxiety, that it is a way of us getting positive strokes. In other words, it's acceptable and it's just how that person does a thing. And so when we were actually discussing doing the program, you know, the nature nurture, has it come down through our family line? Is it somebody who has had depression? Is it because of, you know, and I was in the write-up, I was talking about the research that was done in Russia with 177 male adolescents, and, you know, looking at depression rates and the rise of depression rates. And is it because, you know, their parent or rearing included physical violence or punishment, hostility, lack of respect for the child's point of view, unjustified criticism in front of others? And, you know, some of that research was absolutely fascinating, and looking at the boys, you know, especially with rejecting their mothers and a specific form of dopamine was found in their blood, and which leads obviously to major depression and suicidal tendencies. And what I found astonishing when I was doing a little bit of research just to get some of those numbers was that, you know, by 2020, anxiety and depression are projected to be the second leading cause of disability worldwide. And when you look at that type of prediction, especially in research, you tend to take it slightly more seriously than having a chat or a cuppa with your neighbour and discussing anxiety and depression. And you look at it and just go, Well, that is astonishing. And, you know, we should be, as a global family and the family of humanity, be helping turn this around. You know, anxiety and depression are something that is rife and epidemic at epidemic levels in society right here, right now. And you just look at it and go, we have to find a better way of helping the people who suffer from anxiety and depression. And, you know, I go back to Acorn to Oak's core methodology, and I just look at it and go, you know, here are the, you know, the three levels of consciousness. The first level of consciousness being our conscious minds, which is just 10% of our mind's capacity. But in that 10%, we run our daily lives. It's the story factory that we have in our minds. It's the, you know, it's how we do life. It's fight or flight. So, you know, if we have fight or flight, which is on hyper alert, which doesn't help with the anxiety state. In fact, you know, one of the reasons that we as human beings had fight or flight was to make sure that we would survive our ancestral history of being, you know, cavemen. And if a saber-toothed tiger came along, you know, we wanted to be able to dump our adrenaline and dump dopamine into our bloodstream so that we could run really fast to get out of the way of this saber-toothed tiger. However, you don't meet saber-toothed tigers walking down, you know, Park Lane in London. Well, you hope not anyway. And it's like, okay, fair enough. So that time of being has gone, but we still have the fight or flight response. And therefore, if unfortunately, with some of the ways that our society is today, with some of the things that we eat and some of the things that we drink and some of the chemicals that we ingest, we're looking at, you know, obviously it's a case of fight or flight is actually beginning to be set off by outside things, and this is the environmental factor in some of this anxiety or gross anxiety. And, you know, the way that we have evolved as human beings is in the West now, and also in the East, don't get me wrong, I'm not letting the East off either. On Earth, we are in so much competition with each other, and that leads to huge amounts of anxiety and depression. And when I look at, you know, the competition that we put our children under, you know, even from the age, you know, quite young age of, you know, 3, 4, 5, where we're, you know, they're moving into schools, it's how people look, what they, how they're dressed. You know, the children pick up on this so quickly. You know, luckily my son is 2.5. He hasn't quite gotten into that competition yet. And he's a very secure little boy. So when he goes to nursery, there isn't the competition. He goes to a forest school, so they're outside most of the time. You know, at the moment he's a vegetarian, and he wasn't vaccinated. So therefore he has a very, very healthy immune system. But, you know, again, when we look at how much competition that we allow our children to buy into, and how they look and how they don't look, and what shoes they've got on their feet, and, you know, what iPads they've got, and all of this is not helping us to actually introduce quiet and peace. And it is the quiet and the peace that allows children and adults, don't get me wrong, and adults, to actually live a life that is joyful and live a life that is happy. But if we keep on putting, stress on each other and stress on our children as well as our adults, and also, the older people, where it's still competition with each other to gain resources or gain attention or gain affection or any of these things, is just outrageous that we cannot be more compassionate and empathetic towards other people's needs. And, most of the time when a client comes to see me, they are amazed that, if you come and see me for an appointment, it's a 2-hour appointment. And, I'm also a homeopath, so I will go through the whole case before I even suggest what type of road or what avenue of treatment I would highly recommend to the person who's come to see me. So it's listening to those people, when we actually look at it. And in I know America is very, very different from the UK, but the UK, we have the National Health, and we all go and our first point of contact is with a general practitioner. And that general practitioner, because it's the National Health, you literally get 10 minutes to talk about what you need to talk about, unless you've pre-thought it and asked for a double appointment. Literally, the GP gets 10 minutes. One is putting him in a huge amount of stress to try and help you and diagnose you and send you away with either a prescription or advice or whatever it is that you need. But it's not an awful long time to listen and give that individual a voice. And, one of the things that leads to depression most is not being heard. So I'll see you after the break.
Conscious connection to a more mindful world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
I'm Kathy Williams, host of Sexy Mom Abundant Life radio show on Thursdays at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. On the show, we explore living abundantly in every area of your life. Ways to let go of limiting patterns and beliefs and to step into the flow of creativity and possibility, knowing you are supported by the universe.
We are talking about your life. Ever wonder, is this as good as it gets? No, it could be so much better. At Acorn to Oak, we know you are seeking more happiness, joy, unconditional love, financial freedom, passion, and purpose. Find your unique mojo and live an extraordinary life. Want to know more? Contact us at our website, acorntooak.org.uk.
1 in 3 adults has prediabetes. 1 in 3. That means it could be you, your football buddy. Your football buddy. Or you, your best man. Your worst man. You, your dog walker. Your cat jogger. While 1 in 3 adults has prediabetes, with early diagnosis, prediabetes can be reversed. Take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Hi, so we're back, and just before the break, I was beginning to talk about, one of the things that can be incredibly helpful in anxiety and depression is allowing the person who has that issue or problem in their lives a voice, so they can voice where they're at, what is actually happening for them, whether it is something that needs to be looked at from, maybe none of us had the perfect parenting, none of us had the perfect upbringing. Is it something that has come up from there? Was it a case of physical of punishment or hostility or a lack of respect for the child's point of view? Maybe, as I was saying, unjustified criticism in front of others. It may have come in, when people were having problems. I know in my own story, my own past, I couldn't read. I was very profoundly dyslexic and still am, but couldn't read until I was 13. So as you can imagine, I was, especially at school, it was a difficult time because I was be joshed and completely disrespected by my compatriots. So the other kids used to bully me or try and bully me. The teachers were always, they were trying to be helpful, but they would just say, pay more attention. I was in a mainstream school, there was no help or advice. And I can remember, at the age of about 14, basically saying, yes, you've cracked this, you can read to a certain degree now. But the only way I'm going to be happy is to make sure I'm happy. And realize, quite young, as a teenager, that I was in charge of how people reacted to me, and I was not going to be swayed by what they said. However, that takes quite a lot of resolve, and not all children and youngsters in any way, they are swayed by their peers an awful lot. And unfortunately, it's like in nature, if somebody, if an animal was wounded, they're more likely to get attacked. If they're not a good runner, then they're going to be the ones who are caught by predators, etc., etc., etc. And unfortunately, humankind is no better than that. If there's a problem with someone's perception or somebody's, anxiety levels, they will be joshed by other kids. They will be, again, if they're seen as grumpy or depressed, they won't get the friends, they won't get the people who are there necessarily to help and support them. And, children are actually quite savage to other children in an awful lot of ways when things are seen as this is unnormal, or it's not seen as the general run of how people should be. And it's really quite sad, and you need to grow in maturity before you realize that there is as many different ways of doing things as there are people on the planet. And what is normal? That's one of my biggest things, I think, is who decides what normal is. Because, you know, all we're doing is we're taking where, you know, in a herd of animals, we're just looking at where's the speed of the general herd. And that's what we describe as being normal. But there's people who are on maybe on the left side of it, people who are on the right side of it, people who are above it, people who are below it, you know. It's as many different ways, and it's about finding or encouraging people to find what their center is, what their core is. And yes, we all worry to a certain degree. We all have worries and things that, you know, can spark us off and make us go, you know, I wonder what if, you know. But it's, again, that's very much, as I was beginning to say, you know, that's the 10%, that's the conscious mind. The conscious mind is telling us, you know, I need to worry about this. I need to worry about paying my mortgage. I need to worry about, you know, how this looks for other people or what is going on here. And it's actually looking at it and realizing that the conscious mind is there to help us to survive. It's our daily living structure. And in order for us to make sense of the world and to make sense of, you know, the five senses that are bringing in information, you know, smells, tastes, touches, all those things. And we're bringing that into our minds to make sense of it. And in order to make sense of it, the rational mind actually looks at it and goes, what is this information, and builds up stories around how to make sense of things. So if somebody, you know, and I've worked with many children on this, where it's a case of when they go to school and they arrive and it's not a school that wears uniform, they feel as soon as they walk into the school they're being judged on what they wear, how they look, you know, are they clean and tidy, are they scruffy, are they, you know, have they got, you know, depending on whether it's girls or boys, you know, the boys are not so worried about fashion, but the girls are, you know, are they wearing something that's trendy and in sync with everybody else, or are they hippie-ish, or are they too preppy, or are they, and again, take it, you know, the kids put people in different brackets so that they can put them into a box and they've made sense of it. And in doing that, you know, if somebody bites their nails or they do this or they do that, again, they feel like they're being judged, which then leads to more anxiety. And eventually, you know, anxiety will go down the route. As we suppress more and more, it goes down to the root of depression. When we're not feeling connected with our, you know, our family, which is humanity. And when we start feeling disconnected, you know, disconnected from ourselves, disconnected from our family, our global family, and when then we feel like we can no longer partake of the things that everybody else partakes of. So it's looking at it and just going, whoa, you know, nature or nurture, depression. Yes, some of it is nature and some of it is nurture. I would say maybe 50-50. But we do need to look at how, you know, we've been reared and how our parents have been reared and how their parents were reared. So, you know, whenever I'm talking about ancestral healing, I'm talking about moving things back seven generations to clear everything so that we can be more of a blank page. So we can actually start looking at making better and more informed decisions about how we want to be in our lives without taking on board some of the nature and the nurture. And, you know, nature and nurture is a really important thing to have. And it's just looking at it and going, you know, when something comes in and we're anxious about something, is actually looking at it and going, well, what's the truth around this? Why is anxiety here? Is it because I'm frightened about my survival? Is my survival under threat here? Or is it that I'm anxious that I will not be liked, or I don't feel worthy of the attention that I'm getting? Or what is the story factory that's going on around the anxiety? And I remember one particular case that came to me, quite a young lass in her early 20s. And she came to me because she was suffering from panic attacks. And the panic attacks, you know, she was trying to move her career on, and she was finding that she would have panic attacks before public speaking, which an awful lot of people do. You know, they start getting butterflies, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But hers was so extreme that she began, because it was the nature of the work that she was doing, she began taking off-the-shelf medication called Calms. I don't know if you have them in the United States, but they're a herbal thing that actually helps you to become less anxious. And it has a form of St. John's wort in it. And she was taking more and more of those. And what was very interesting for me to hear was when she described it, what she described was she didn't just take them. What she actually said was, I gobbled them down. And I went, hmm. And for me, that was the center of the case, because it's not a expression that you hear very often when someone says, I gobbled them down. And as we moved through a few weeks of treating her, and we used breath work with this and various other bits and pieces, what we realized was that the panic was underneath the actual site, the actual crutch, or the, you know, the center of the case. The panic was just a film over absolute anger. And the anger, you know, one of the things that I say about depression is one of the biggest emotions in depression is suppressed anger. You know, because the only way we can deal with it, because it's never been safe to feel the anger, is to suppress it to such a level that we numb out and we become totally and utterly divorced from our authentic self. And in pressing down that anger, as we began to work with it, she got in touch with more and more and more of the anger, and her story became quite profound, because what actually had happened was the anger and the depression, the etiology was because she had been abused as a child. And in dealing with those emotions and in dealing with that depression and raising the vibration of that emotion up, she dealt with it all and actually has become a very successful public speaker and a very, very successful financial broker. And what happened was it all started off with this one, thing that I panic a little bit when I'm public speaking. And what is amazing is helping people unravel that knot of yarn, which... So hopefully Matty's here. Hey!
Good evening.
That was obviously a journey and a half.
It certainly was, yes. Some learning in there. I'll reflect on that later, see what the learning is. Technology.
Oh, yeah. You just love it. But, such is life. Anyway, we were discussing anxiety and depression, nature and nurture. And yep. I was just talking about a case where we started off with an etiology of panic attacks, usually brought on by the thought of public speaking. And yep. as we dealt with the anxiety and the depression, we realized that underneath was anger. And right. as we dealt with the anger, we realized that we went back to the etiology of child abuse. And as sure. we moved through the whole journey, what happened was this particular client dealt with the anger through breathwork and dealt with some of the trauma. In fact, actually went to court and basically confronted the person who had abused her. Mm-hmm. And afterwards went through and became a very good public speaker and a fantastic financial broker. So it was just telling that story that of when we deal with anxiety or depression, we can actually move through to freedom. But, you know, some of the things I know you've missed an awful lot of it, Matthew.
Yeah, interesting how, other than the court stuff, all of that resonated with me and parts of my story. I think it's a sort of like, it is a very, anxiety and depression is a very common thing these days. And it's something I've experienced in my life. And I think one of the worst bits is we don't talk about it enough and people aren't sort of aware about it. And when you're in that state, or especially when I was dealing with my depression, there were sort of days where you feel like you don't even want to get out of bed and you get anxious around sort of, you're almost, it's almost like there's something bad about to happen all the time, or that's sort of how it feels. So you actually, the worse it gets, the more you sort of close in, and you don't perhaps share with friends and family because the thought forms around that is, I don't want to be a burden on anybody. And so you put on a brave face and just crack on, and it's kind of, some of the biggest smiles are hiding the biggest wounds. I think for me that was one of the things that when I actually reached out, and it was Penny I worked with and got the help that I needed, it was such a sigh of relief that I could actually be honest around my feelings, and just owning that, it makes such a difference. I think people shy away from it because there's a sense of shame around, oh, I can't tell anybody that I'm depressed because then they'll think I've got a mental illness. And the whole word mental, there's obviously a stigma around it. People don't want to sort of use that word and say I've got a mental illness because people think they're crazy. Whereas actually it's just being emotionally imbalanced, or that's what my experience was. Because when I was actually going through it, I thought that I was just sad and scared. Whereas actually, very much like Penny said, underneath that sad and scared was a whole ball of anger mainly directed at myself, that I hadn't even clocked it, didn't even put the two and two together. And the more I worked on that, the clearer I became and was able to sort of work through some of the other emotions as well. So we'll pick this up after the break.
We certainly will.
A conscious lifestyle for a mindful life. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. Om Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single Om Times endeavor. Host your show with Om Times Radio Network.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going On? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
We are talking about your life. Ever wonder, is this as good as it gets? No, it could be so much better. At Acorn to Oak, we know you are seeking more happiness, joy, unconditional love, financial freedom, passion, and purpose. Find your unique mojo and live an extraordinary life. Want to know more? Contact us at our website, acorntooak.org.uk.
Long ago, you wouldn't think of galloping on a horse while doing calligraphy, and you wouldn't have attempted to ride your bike while typing a letter. Yet you think you can safely operate a multi-ton vehicle while texting? Behind the wheel is no place to multitask. If you want to BRB, drive now and text later. Lives depend on it.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
So hi, we're back, and basically talking about anxiety and depression, nature or nurture. And you know, we've been talking a little a bit about how people can get caught into competition, which can lead to you know, definitely with children, looking at how they're doing their lives. Are their lives on track? Are they wearing the right kit, the right gear? Do they look a certain way? Have they got, you know, are they popular with the other kids, etc., etc.? And how anxiety and depression can come in when they feel that they're not conforming to the normal. And I did say earlier on, Matthew, that what is normal? You know me, I can have a good rant now and again.
Yeah, well, this is it. There is no normal. And I think we sort of almost set the bar really high, and kids are expected to all be doing well. We'll have different skill sets. We'll learn at different paces. And I think kids can be sort of damaged quite badly when they're told they're not good at something, because actually they could be very good at something. They just need more practice. And so I think it makes a huge difference when you have sort of positive affirmations as opposed to the negative ones. And when we're told, oh, well, these are the set grades, or this is what you're expected to do in sport, some people just naturally aren't sporty. But being told they're not good at something can automatically sort of set off an affirmation within yourself, where you keep telling yourself, oh, well, so-and-so told me this once, and I'm not good at that. And
yeah, it's really interesting that you mentioned sport, because, you know, for me, as you're aware, you know, I'm profoundly dyslexic. I couldn't read until I was 13, but the one thing I was good at was sport. You know,
yep.
Stick a racket in my hand or a hockey stick in my hand, I was outstripped most people, and I was playing at county level. For all of these things, you know, swimming, I was brilliant at swimming. So it was the one thing that I could hold my head up around, was I may not be educationally sound, but the one thing I could do was, if you put me on a field, I could run faster than most people. I could definitely dribble a ball faster than most people. I could play tennis. I could swim. So I was constantly up on the stage receiving a cup or whatever. So I think that's what gave me a healthy sense of self. But when it came to education, it took me a long, long time in my life to catch up with what I felt that I should be doing. I mean, as you know, that I in the end took two master's degrees. I have a master's degree in clinical psychology, and I have a master's degree in nursing. And it's, you know, you look at that and just go, talk about overcompensate later on in life. But yes, and I can see that now, whereas at the time it was a case of I just needed to prove that I could educationally hold my head up.
Yeah. And I think that's really interesting that you say that, because my experience, I was exceptional at sport, and it was the one thing that I just loved because I was good at. But I was told by one of my teachers when I was younger that sport, it's a hobby, it's not a career. So it's really interesting that I took that one comment on board and never thought I could succeed in sport because of it wasn't a career. Whereas Penny's more, if you tell Penny she can't do something, it's watch this.
Yeah, and that's always been, you know, thank heaven that has always been my attitude, is you know, I think very much when I made that decision that nobody was going to run or control my life, it very much became a mantra. And, you know, that came in about 13, 14 when I finally cracked being able to read. And I had spent years, I would say seven years, in feeling insecure and feeling like I was never going to amount to anything. And I think once I actually cracked it, it was a case of nobody is ever going to do that to me again. And yeah, so yeah, I've always had that attitude of, you know, seize life by the feet and give it a damn good shake and see what falls out. Be very open to the opportunities and just go for it and have as much fun and be as happy as you possibly can. And I think having had that little bit of adversity at the beginning of my life helped me turn it around real quick.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, an awful lot of people will look at that and, you know, maybe the attention of being anxious or having a bit of a problem with different things is the payoff for not making that type of decision. But I think for me, it was just a case of, I was, again, it's nature or nurture, from the nurture point of view, I was the youngest of four kids, and therefore, if you wanted positive attention, then you were a go-getter. And therefore, that's the decision I made, was, you know, not only am I going to be a go-getter, but I'm going to outstrip most go-getters. So it's really important just to look at your own definitions of what you think anxiety is. And what you think depression is. And how do they show up in your own life? Because, as I was saying before Matthew got on the call, was very much a case of, again, going back to that 10% of your conscious mind. And our conscious mind thinks it's in control. But it's not.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's not. And it's I was just pausing a little bit there because I was getting a little bit of feedback from the radio. But it's really important to know that the conscious mind, it's part of the conscious mind's job, is to make sense of what is happening in your daily life. And therefore, it makes up stories to try and make sense of what is going on. But then we get sucked into that story factory, and it's actually not the truth. You know, it is what our mind has made up. And we can get off that loop or cycle by doing a really good pattern interrupt. And a pattern interrupt is making a new empowered decision. A NED, we call them for short.
Yeah, we like a good NED.
Oh dear. And it is also just having a great sense of humour about yourself. Because the trouble is, you know, unfortunately, kids and teenagers and young adults take themselves far, far too seriously.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, life is a game. Okay. And, you know, it's learning to play that game to suit yourself. Yeah. So Matthew, would you like to
yeah, and I think from obviously from personal experience and dealing with clients, it's sometimes the first step's the hardest, so just admitting it to yourself that you're not sort of feeling maybe as just as happy as you are. And obviously I'm sure Penny's covered it, but there's lots of varying degrees of depression. You could, for some people, it's more extreme than others, but it's about realizing that actually you're not feeling joyful all the time, and sometimes it can take baby steps at first. I was very fortunate along my journey to find Penny and breath work, so it was very fast and very effective for me. But it's amazing how many people out there feel the same way. We've said it on previous shows, like, nobody's had the perfect life, and some people may have gains in certain areas, but in other areas they're not so good. So for me, the physical side was great, but the mental experience was not so great. And it was through myself telling myself stories around things which almost fueled the depression. So I love the quote, worrying is like praying for what you don't want. Because when I look back and think about how much of the time I was disconnected and I was worrying, and this worrying about things that A, meant nothing, and you'd almost make up situations, as I said earlier, like you tell yourself that you can't be honest with your friends and family because you'll be a burden on them.
And I know, I mean, it's ridiculous, isn't it?
It is. It is. When you think about it, it is absolutely ridiculous. It's like we turn away from the people that care about us the most. And for me, I very much wore a mask. I wasn't showing my true self to my friends. I would just put on an act the whole time. And actually, we've got to the first step can be realizing you don't have to do that.
The tears of a clown.
Yeah, absolutely.
So anyway, I hope you've enjoyed the show tonight, and we will see you next week.
Love it. Take care, everybody.